Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Trent Dilfer, Super Bowl, Pro Bowl, played in the NFL for 15 years. I covered him when he played in Tampa. He has been around a long time, and he is now joining us live in Nashville, where he's the football coach at Lipscomb Academy. Tampa's such a funny place because they've had so much dysfunction. They've had a lot of great players. You can't dispute that. They've had Leroy Selmans, the Saps, Warwick Dunn. But it was always just a little loose, Maybe the front office wasn't right or the roster. And then Tom comes in and cinches it all up. I was saying this week, there are some things I look at after that Saints loss, and I thought, this just isn't right. It's just not right. And then something happened, and I don't know exactly what it was. What was your moment with Tampa that you kind of bought in? Because it was real late for me, like maybe 3 weeks ago.
Mine was maybe a little earlier than that, but all the boring stuff started coming into play. You could tell that after that 7-5 start, they had the bye week, and Bruce Arians even said it last week after the game, one man kind of just changed the moral authority of the locker room and started speaking up on all the boring little things that actually equal wins. Their special teams got better. You know, it's yesterday in the press conference, Tom was asked about Kansas City and all the qualities they had. And the second thing he mentioned was the kicking game. Like, he values the kicking game. So all of a sudden, Tampa's kicking game gets better. Their coverage teams get better. Field positions better. Protection, 20% more 6-7-man protections. More play action. Running the ball more. Let's be more committed to the run. And then you got to imagine that just in the course of the culture, there was a lot of little things that may have been slacking. That he's like, listen, guys, the way we do small things, the way we do all things. So a guy like Tom Brady, he's not just the greatest player that's ever played, but he's the greatest moral authority a locker room's ever had. And he can immediately start interjecting his point of view, his perspective, and all the pelts on the wall in how you run your program. And I think all that stuff help them start changing who they were, changing their identity, and then all those small things start adding up into wins. Next thing you know, you're 7-0 and you're playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. We were talking off the air, and I'm going to set you up for this. You like Tampa more than most. A lot of the media people, I'm one of them, I just kind of feel like, boy, this Kansas City team's won 25 of 26, and you got to pick your poison in the big play. You can play them smart, and they hit you for two big plays. And, you know, San Francisco outplayed them 75% of the game last year and lost. And that was a team with a great lineup. But what is the way Tampa's going to win? Like, in your mind, wrap your head around some stuff that we could see that you think is very highly probable.
Well, and it's a brutal pick. I'm not a betting man. I wouldn't bet on this one. I think Kansas City is so hard to bet against because their floor is so high, right? They can play bad and still beat you. They can play bad for three quarters of the game and still beat you. So for that reason, if I had to make a pick, I would go with Kansas City to win the game because they don't have to be at all cylinders. They don't be firing all cylinders to beat you. But you can think of, from the football sense, a million reasons why Tampa could win this game. I think it starts with the line of scrimmage. Like, this time of year, we're always talking about the flash and sizzle, all the sexy things of football. But you go into the buildings, and they're talking about line of scrimmage play and front seven play and the old school things that actually win consistently. And you look at Tampa's front seven, especially the front four versus an offensive line that's going to be missing two starters, and you're like, the defensive line alone could simply ruin this game for Kansas City. And then people go, oh, yeah, but Mahomes is magical. Yes, he is. But they're at their best when he's only has to be magical 4, 6, 7 times a game. He may have to be magical 15 to 25 times a game if they can't block Tampa. I would think in the course of that, with him moving around and playing off platform and throwing the ball sidearm and no looking, all the things he does when it's chaotic, that he's also going to make a couple mistakes. And if you make a couple mistakes, whether it's a strip sack, whether it's a ball bounces off a guy because he's not looking, a ball's overthrown and a safety catches it, two of those, when you're giving the ball back to Tom Brady and this explosive offense, can cost you the game. So if one position group can ruin this game for the other team, it's Tampa's defensive line could absolutely ruin this game for Kansas City.
Yeah, I want to talk about something we're seeing in the NFL. I saw a story yesterday, Kyle Shanahan considering a trade Kirk Cousins for Garoppolo, and the Rams bailed on Jared Goff. You know, we're a year removed from a Super Bowl from Garoppolo, and 2 years or so removed, 3 years from Goff. And guy, is it because football's now worth so much money? People don't have patience. I mean, it did look like Goff struggled with confidence. Like when you saw that move, Stafford Goff, what did it say to you? The Rams bailed on a kid. They used 6 picks to get him and 3 more to bail on him, and they still paid him. I mean, what did it say to you?
My head's spinning a little bit. I just think it's fascinating how the NFL wins. Like, we'll get into this, but at the end of the day, the NFL wins because you're leading your shows. The worldwide leaders leading their shows. Everybody's leading their shows with the NFL, and it's going to continue. It's going to be quarterbacks or the draft. Nobody's talking about the NBA. Nobody's talking about golf. Nobody's talking about hockey. Nobody's talking about quarterbacks. Quarterbacks on the move, and then there's a trickle-down effect, right? We had Stafford, Goff. Where's Deshaun going? Where's Kirk Cousins going to go? Where's Sam Darnold going to go? Now Trevor Lawrence versus Justin Fields. Oh, what about Wilson from BYU? Where is that domino fit? Oh, Tua. We got to talk about Tua. Is he going to be the quarterback in Miami, or is he going to be the quarterback in Houston? And the NFL wins. Park City wins over and over because it's Park Avenue, because we're talking about this.
Yeah.
And the Goff Stafford thing is mind-boggling. It really is to a certain degree for all the reasons you said. And everyone say who won, who lost, because we have to have a winner, we have to have a loser. And I'm sitting back going, can the answer be both? Can both win? I can give you a really good argument to why the Rams, it's justifiable for the Rams to do this. They definitely get an upgrade with a quarterback that has better movement qualities. They're going to be more explosive offensively. He's going to play in muddy waters a little bit better. I think he's going to challenge the coaching staff. Now, think about Matt Stafford going in with Kevin O'Connell, who's one of the best young coaches in all of football. Sean McVay, who obviously has pelts on the wall already young age. But now they're talking to a peer. Now they're talking to a dude that has a lot of pelts on the wall, that's played offense a lot of different ways, that's had a lot of fourth quarter comebacks, that has strong opinions on what he likes to do and what he doesn't like to do. It's going to challenge the coaching staff. I think that's going to make them better. I think they're going to be a better offense with Matthew Stafford. But Jared Goff was 1-10. Cal was 1-10 when Jared Goff got there. He's not a stranger to rebuilds. Now he feels appreciated. They have extra picks. They have Anthony Lynn, Dan Campbell combination, which is going to be old school, hard nose, run the football, and then play action. I think there's a lot of things where you can say, you know what? Both won. And that's okay. I know that's not politically correct at any level to say they both can win. We always have to have a winner and a loser these days. But I think in this situation, both won.
You know, I had Andy Reid on earlier, a great play designer. And I said, you know, Walsh was known, Sean Payton. I don't think of the NFL, I don't think of great play designers very often. I don't.
You should.
You think there's a lot of great ones out there?
Oh, no. I think the great ones differentiate themselves really quick. You know, I think that they're set apart.
So Andy Reid, is he the best?
He's one of the best. I'd put Sean Payton there. There's other great ones. Sean McVay is a very good one. I think LaFleur is a very good one. This new generation, I think, puts a lot more emphasis on it. Here's what I always say. When you get your contacts, when your sources and their coaches tell you, oh, we all run the same stuff, we're all designing the same place, immediately I'd probably stop listening to that person. Because there is definitely a upper crust of football minds that fit their personnel with play designs that put more conflict on the defense and make the position easier to play for the quarterback. And the only people nodding their heads right now are those elite play callers and all those quarterbacks and offensive players that have experienced that. There is just such a gap between your average offensive play designer and your elite play designer. And the quarterbacks that are going to the Hall of Fame, the quarterbacks that consistently throw 40 touchdowns a year and put up mind-boggling numbers, they usually benefit from those elite play callers. It's why there's so much theft in the NFL, play theft. You see so many coaches that don't have the creative mind to come up with their new way of doing things that's elite. So what they do is they go to tape, because we all have access to the same tape, and they study the Andy Reid's, they study the Sean Payton's. I remember Mike Martz. Mike Martz, one of the greatest play designers of all time. And you started seeing him come in the league, and you started seeing these things the Rams were doing. And then all of a sudden, every team was trying to do them. But they didn't do them quite as well because they didn't know the why behind them. And then you talk to the Kurt Warners, the Trent Greens, the Isaac Bruces, Marshall Faulk, who knows as much football as anybody on the planet. And they start telling you the why their version of it worked, but yet our version didn't work wherever I was playing at the time. We didn't know the why. We didn't know the genesis of the play. We didn't know the exact nuts and bolts behind it and what came out of the lab with it. So you're looking at, let's call it 20 on the Mount Rushmore of the best play callers of all time. And then there's about 500 that sit notches below them. And that's why they have mediocre offenses.
Yeah. Trent Dilfer is joining us. Lipscomb Academy head football coach in Nashville, Tennessee, a great place to live. Good seeing you on Super Bowl week, Trent. Appreciate it.
Thanks, brother. Sorry I was so long-winded with those answers. You got me fired up today, baby.
No, I love it. Thanks. I love having you on the show. By the way, Trent, for years and years, talked about coaching. And my guess is he's going to stay in it for a while. He has had great success. But I will say this about Andy Reid, is they do stuff that you've never seen. And he just, and it's not – Andy's unique. He didn't have a system. They just do plays that nobody's seen. Like McVay, the Rams always look the same. They have a system. I can look at a game and go, oh, that's Sean McVay's footprint. With Andy, not really. He just kind of doesn't have a system. He just, here's my personnel and I'm going to change it. Right now he's got the fastest receiver and the best tight end. So he's got a surplus of speed. So he builds an offense based on speed and a quarterback that can move around with a huge arm. So they do a lot of over-the-top stuff. I never felt in Philadelphia they did that as often because they didn't have a guy with that arm. They didn't have speed at wide receiver in Philly.
Well, I think that's a sign of a great leader and coach, though.
Yes.
That you're flexible and that you understand your personnel.
Of course,
and put them in positions to do what they do best.
Yeah.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is The Herd Line News.
Tom Brady has said many times that it was his goal to play football until he was 45 years old.
Seems old.
He's 43, and he's about to play in another Super Bowl, but he's open to extending his career even further.
I would definitely consider that. And, you know, again, I think, again, it's a physical sport, and just the perspective I have on that is, you know, you never know kind of when, you know, that moment is. Just because it's a contact sport and there's a lot of training that goes into it. And again, it has to be 100% commitment from myself to keep doing it. I don't know when that time will come, but I think I'll know.
I don't know. We have an obsession with asking Tom Brady when he's going to retire.
He looks happy. He's tan.
He's tan. His skin is glowing.
It's easy.
He looks younger, weirdly.
He does. When you live in a cold weather place, and you just deal with it. And then you go live in a warm place. It's so much harder to go back to the cold place.
Correct.
Like, he lived in New England forever. Now he's Jet Ski Tom.
And Jet Ski Tom is living a different life.
And he said twice this year, oh, God, I could never go back. But it's like, that was who he was just a year ago. I mean, he was living up there in January. 1 year ago today, he's living in Foxborough, which had 15 feet of snow this
Some
week.
People are wired that way. They like the seasons.
Yeah, I like the warm one.
James Harrison still lives in Pittsburgh, and he likes the seasons. Yeah. I like looking at the seasons on pictures on Instagram.
Yeah, so do I.
But I prefer seasonless existence.
I'm the same way.
Which is just like sunshine and nice weather every day. But everyone's different. When you get older, though, it definitely does matter. My grandmother used to say she always knew when it was going to rain because all of her, like, knees started aching.
Yeah.
There's something to it. But if he wins this Super Bowl, though.
Oh, God. Monday's headlines. I don't even know what
I'm... But, like, it's similar to, like, the Bradley Beal situation we were just talking about. Like, we can't put our aspirations onto other people. But, like, it feels like, you just go out on top. Like, it's just the perfect storybook ending.
Oh, he's not quitting.
But because it's Tom, we know that's not what he's going to do.
Yeah. No, I mean, like LeBron James. NBA careers don't look like LeBron's. He should be done. But LeBron's whole thing is, I'm fun. I'm getting paid a lot.
He's also still a best player.
And we're winning. Like, I don't know. I think what's happened in America due to nutrition and training, 43 is 38, and in the NBA, 36 is 31.
Well, still outliers. I still think Brady and LeBron are major outliers. But, like, I could see someone like Russell Wilson. I could see Aaron Rodgers. You know, some of the top tier guys playing well into their 40s.
Yeah, I mean,
and not looking like they're deteriorating. But it's just like we always want things to just be sewn up in this perfect little package. Like, we all thought he was going to end his career with the Patriots, and now he's with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers playing in a Super Bowl. Like, who would have seen this coming? I mean, him probably. He'd tell you, but
you know, listen, everybody. You know, every year I think we've hit a saturation point, like only three teams need quarterbacks. But the reality is it feels like every year we replace seven coaches and eight quarterbacks.
Every year. So the Chiefs have plenty of offensive weapons. You did your top 10 list of the Super Bowl best players. Travis Kelce, obviously very dangerous. Another talented tight end playing on Sunday is Rob Gronkowski. And he thinks that Kelce is the player to watch on Kansas City's offense.
I think he's, the best player in the Chiefs' offense. What's one thing that's very intriguing about Travis Kelce, and I never really seen this with any other player in the NFL ever before, is that Kelce gets better every single year that I've seen him play in the NFL. What he has done for the position of the tight end, I can only have respect for that.
He has Kelce from 2016 to 2020 has had over 1,000 yards receiving, scored at least four touchdowns, and made the Pro Bowl in each season. He has 105 receptions, a little over 1,400 yards, and 11 touchdowns, all career highs this season.
Just hard to guard. I mean, it's when I go back to my childhood, I remember the Raiders had a tight end named Dave Casper, and I remember I grew up with the Seattle Seahawks. I don't remember our tight ends. And believe me, I had the roster memorized. I remember Steve Hutchison on the offensive line and Steve Largent. I don't remember the Seahawks tight ends. There were teams that literally didn't use tight end. The Raiders had Dave Casper. The Steelers had Benny Cunningham. They didn't use him a ton. They didn't have to. They had Franco and Lynn and Stallworth. And then you started getting into a generation of like Kellen Winslow, Ozzie Newsome, where like, oh, these guys are real athletes. They don't just block. But now we've reached the point where, like Gronk says, is that the best football player on the team?
Well, the tight end position is just, to your point, developed so much that they are, and Gronk played a big role in this. I mean, we've seen obviously amazing tight ends over the years, but Gronk was so big and so fast and so dominant. There was just no one that could tackle him.
How about this? The Patriots at one point had Aaron Hernandez and Gronk. Aaron was the fastest tight end. I just watched that documentary, a sad, sad story. Aaron was the ultimate chess piece. I remember asking Patrick Chung, former Patriot one time, who's the best player in the league? He goes, he's on my team. I practice against him every day, Aaron Hernandez. He goes, he's faster than me. I'm a safety. How is he faster than me?
Yeah.
And then they had Gronk. And so teams now often have, look at Cleveland, David Njoku and Austin Hooper. They have two great tight ends.
I mean, it changes the game, especially if you can block.
Yeah.
It's an additional offensive line.
Kelce's not a great blocker, but he's okay. He's fine.
Well, the Cardinals had a very up-and-down 2020 season, finished on a sour note, losing five of their last seven games. And Kyler Murray explained that the team's unpredictable performance is why he thinks they struggled. He said, you just didn't know which team you were getting. That comes down to us being inconsistent. Organizations that win, they do everything right. I've said, how do you do anything is how you do everything. We've got to get to the point where we do everything the right way. We don't take any stuff for granted. I think that'll change the narrative or feel around the organization.
Well, he was better this year than last. So the bottom line is he's in a really tough division. They were inconsistent, but he was better. There's no question he was better.
How much longer does Cliff Kingsbury have?
About a year.
He's 13-18-1.
One more year.
I think so, too.
That's it.
I think if they have another disappointing season, or don't take a significant step up this year, it could be.
Listen, it's not like he walked into an easy place to coach. Pete Carroll twice, Sean McVay twice, Kyle Shanahan twice. You get no breathers. Every week you're facing a top five coach in the league.
Yeah, I mean, life's not fair.
Well, I know, but it's just, like, brutal.
No, I get it. I'm just saying we are very impatient with everything now. Kyler Murray is still a young quarterback on his rookie deal. Like, how much longer do you have there to get things going? The division is the division, obviously, we know, but you have your quarterback now. I think they have to take a significant step up next season.
Yeah, they're not rebuilding, but they still need. I mean, they got a great safety in Budda Baker. They're good at wide receiver. Offensive line was actually better than Arizona's offensive line actually improved.
It kind of feels like a little bit like an Anthony Lynn situation, though. You lose five of your last seven games.
Yeah,
you have your starting quarterback. You have an A-plus wide receiver. Like, you have some pieces in place there.
Listen,
it's not a dysfunctional organization.
Matt Stafford of the Rams does Arizona no favors.
No.
I mean, the division.
It's just getting better.
So Garoppolo comes back. Matt Stafford. Seattle gets a new offensive coordinator. It's rough. Listen, man, it's like being Florida football, and you got Bama, and you got LSU, and you got Auburn, and you can be good and fourth. You could be really good. You could be a really good team next. You could be 8-8 and fourth.
But it's just, is that good enough for your organization?
8-8, he keeps his gig.
8-8? Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. Joy of the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
He's got two rings. Danny Amendola, thoughtful guy, is joining us next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Danny Amendola, 12 NFL seasons. Tom Brady's buddy, by the way, you've been in these Super Bowl weeks with Tom. So you tell me, is he a little more loose? Is he a little more intense? Does it change, or is Tom during Super Bowl week?
Tom's Tom, man. He's the same. He's been preparing for this, you know, his whole life, this whole year, especially with this group of guys he's with, and he's the same guy.
You know, it's funny. I defended him when he got the divorce with he and Belichick. I said, listen, man, when you get older, you want to be the man. You don't want to be the only man. And he feels like the only guy left in New England. There's no receivers. Nobody can separate. So when he left and chose Tampa, did it surprise you?
It was a little bit shocking. You know, in my mind, when I was there, I always felt like Tom was going to end his career there. I mean, business is business. And, you know, Tom was, you know, ready for a transition. He took it. So, you know, I'm obviously excited to see where he is now, and I'm always going to be rooting for him.
Listen, you left New England. You got tired of it. It wore you out. You know, they ask you constantly, Danny, to sacrifice money, sacrifice individualism. You know, listen, I get it. Like, that, when you left there, were you worn out a little bit with New England?
Well, I was an extreme, you know, I was a huge fan of Bill and the way he coached and his tactics and what he did to prepare us for the game. I loved playing for Bill. In a lot of cases, it was the same reason why I went to Detroit and got to play for Coach Patricia. But the fact that he also wore the GM hat and I had to negotiate my contract with them 3 years in a row by myself and take pay cuts to, you know, help him and put rings on his finger, kind of wore me the wrong way. So I felt like it was in best interest for me to move on.
Do you think in the end, Tom leaving and succeeding like this as a player, does it make you happy? It's not anti-Bill, but it's more that Tom's kind of proving it was about the player, not the coach.
Yeah, I'm definitely not anti-Bill, man. I love what he's done and how he approaches the game as a head coach. Again, business is business, and you got to be doing – and I learned from Bill, you got to do business as business is being done. And, you know, if he wants to cut your pay in half and you can get more on the street and you can go somewhere else and help provide for your family, then that's what you got to do. And I feel like you know, that's the same reason why Tom is out of New England and he's on to Tampa.
You talk to Tom anymore?
Yeah, I talked to him 4 days ago, but we keep in touch on social media and in text. So I talked to him a couple times a week.
Yeah, you had a great relationship. You guys hit it off early. Why do you think that is?
You know, I get an emotional charge from him. He has the ability to obviously play good football, but he can really raise the level of his teammates in the locker room. This is a guy that is at the top of his game, but with his lifestyle, with the way he approaches the game, he can lift the rest of his teammates to play at a higher level. And that's what I loved about him. That's what I loved about training with him and playing with him. And I knew that we would get into the nitty gritty, into the playoffs and into the Super Bowl, that, you know, we could relate and we could communicate, talk to each other and get the job done. So
yeah,
he's just a great teammate.
Yeah, he trusted you. He had 152 passing yards to you alone against Philadelphia. You got almost 300.
Well,
he trusted you.
I was a system guy, Colin. You know what I'm saying? So I was running around trying to do my job, brother.
We're all just doing our job, brother. We're all doing it. By the way, Matty Stafford goes to the Rams. Jared Goff, who throws a pretty good ball as well, coming to you. Tell me about Stafford, what I don't know. What's Matt like behind the scenes? What's Stafford like?
Man, he's a Texas boy through and through. High school football player, went to Georgia, loves football, loves playing quarterback. He prepares just as good as anybody else in the NFL, if not better. And he's a great teammate. He's obsessed with the game. You know, he has an amazing arm. Obviously, he has great talent. And he gets every question right on Jeopardy. So he's smart. He's a great player, man. I'm really excited for him, his family, and I know they are excited to be in L.A.
Hey, listen, you've been in three Super Bowls. You played in a lot of football games. You're not the kind of guy. You've been a big game player. Is the Super Bowl different? Do you have a little butterflies playing in them?
You do, yeah, no doubt. The first one I went to, I was nervous. You know, I returned the opening kickoff to the first Super Bowl I played in, and I told myself, regardless of whether he kicks it 5 yards deep, 6 yards deep, so I'm gonna take it out. I think I got it to the 19. I wasn't too happy about that, but it was nervous, man. I got to see all the lights go off in Arizona when we're playing the Seahawks, and I caught the ball and I ran, and it was a dream come true.
Yeah, yeah. Who do you like Sunday?
Man, I'll tell you what, they're two great teams. I feel like it's going to be an offensive showdown. I feel like they're going to score a lot of points, and I truly feel like the last team with the ball is going to win, whether it's by a field goal or by a touchdown. So, you know, two great teams, man. A lot of speed with the Chiefs. You know, a lot of talent with the Bucs, but we'll just have to see.
Yeah. Okay. He is a free agent. He's been in three Super Bowls. He's still productive, undrafted in 2008 out of Texas Tech, and he made playoffs in each of his 5 years with the New England Patriots. He's Danny Amendola, and he's on the market, ladies and gentlemen. He is on the market. Good luck to you, man.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to be on your show, man. Huge fan.
Thanks, Danny Amendola, who he was a go-to guy. Brady trusted him. Brady doesn't throw to guys he doesn't trust. He's like very much Aaron Rodgers there. He just won't throw to you. If Tom didn't trust you, he won't throw to you. He didn't throw that last year in New England. There was a lot of he was throwing the ball. He was throwing the ball away a lot.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to keep their home and family safe. Go to Simply Safe Home Security, simplysafe.com/Colin. Get a free security camera today. So Danny, Trent Dilfer, Eric Dickerson, Peter King, and Andy Reid all stopped by the show today. That was good stuff. So we got a busy week. We got a lot of stars coming on the show. We got Stephon Diggs later this week.
Russell Wilson.
I think Terry Bradshaw's on tomorrow. The supplement I take every morning is M-Drive. Go to mdriveformen.com today. Free shipping, money-back guarantee as well. Keep you lean. Keep you strong for joy. Greg Tuohy, everybody here. We'll see you tomorrow live in Los Angeles. It's been The Herd.